since this is the first time that I've spoke to you, and I think you've been on WGIL, what are some of the things that are most important for voters in the 17th district to know about you and why they should support you to be their congressman in this November?
Yeah, so I think, you know, my entire life, I've dedicated it to public service. That's really important to me. My parents instilled that in myself. My dad was a small-town high school teacher and ball coach, and my mom was a school nurse. But, you know, throughout my entire life, my 12 years, I've been a high school teacher teaching social studies, you know, most recently economics and government. And then I've also been a coach myself, coached baseball and basketball. Our record could have been better, but hey, you think we can get here.
Yeah.
And then also I've been in the National Guard, the Illinois Army National Guard, for the last 10 years. Very proud of that service, to include one combat deployment to Afghanistan. And once we got back from Afghanistan, we were right in the throes of COVID. And so, you know, helping support these missions to, you know, COVID vaccine responses, COVID testing responses, really important work that the Illinois Army National Guard's been doing. Really proud of that. And then for the last 5 years, serving as a city alderman. And, you know, I don't have a staff. When somebody calls me up, we work to solve their issues just one-on-one. And it's good work, important work. But I think that's, you know, what I want people to know is that whenever they call Jonathan Logeman, they're always going to get a phone call back, and that commitment to public service is very important to me.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about being an alderman. How do you think that specific kind of experience on that local level helps set you up to be a good congressman?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm the only municipal official in this race right here. And so, you know, I can think of just up here in Rockford a couple specific projects where, you know, we've gotten some state support. You know, the city, we've supported some of these measures as best we can. But, you know, it's going to take a little extra boost from the federal government. You know, I'm thinking of one particular project. You know, it would kind of rebuild a creekway, would contribute to flood mitigation as well. And, you know, through that project, things like that breathe new life into neighborhoods. So having that experience on the local level, you know, I think gives me a really unique perspective. That's what I want to bring to this campaign. So often, you know, you watch Fox News or MSNBC, and what I want to do is bring that local flavor to Congress and make sure that we're supporting our communities, small towns, to the big cities that are across this entire district. So, yeah, I think that experience as a local elected official, as a city alderman, you know, like I said earlier, I don't have a staff. I deal with these issues one-on-one. I think that really makes me a good candidate for this race.
And, you know, I kind of ask this as somebody that observes a lot of municipal meetings with school boards and city councils, but is there anything along the lines of, bipartisanship or working with other people on a local level, and the flavor of that you would like to bring to Congress? Are there any lessons, I guess, that could be learned as far as working with constituents and other elected officials in the local elected body? Can that carry over to Congress? That's obviously a different animal, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll tell you, here in Rockford, we have, not every city has this, but we have partisan municipal elections.
Oh.
And so back in 2017, you know, I'm a Democrat. And then in 2017, I unseated a Republican, and all of the areas around, the second ward in Rockford are Republican areas. And I sit between, Republicans on city council, and I have, you know, myself, excellent relationships with those aldermen, and I treasure and I value those relationships, because at the end of the day, it's not about, you know, we get all caught up in who's a Democrat, who's a Republican, but, you know, my colleagues on city council and myself know that we are there to support the people in our neighborhoods, in our communities. And I think if we, you know, get back to that mindset and elect more people who have that mindset, putting people first, you know, I think, you know, at all levels of government, local, state, especially national government, federal government, we'd be in a little better position.
I wanted to ask you something. Being a teacher and having also teachers in your family, I'm curious to know what you think of the shortage of teachers right now that I know has been felt locally and across the state of Illinois, but I think it's being felt across the country. Are there any ideas that you have or anything that we can do to support teachers or to address the shortage, do you think?
Yes. That, you know, for me personally, this is a crisis, in not only in the state but in the country. One statistic, when I was listening to the radio, I was actually taking my little 5-year-old, soon to be 6-year-old, on the 4th of July here, to kindergarten. You know, I heard on the local radio that 50% of teachers are thinking about leaving the teaching force, and that we cannot have that and function, you know, as vibrant communities if that's the case. And I even had to tell, you know, my little 5-year-old, she started to cry when we told her about what spring break was and what summer break was, because she kept wanting to go to school. She loved school so much. Mm. So, you know, we absolutely need to continue to support education. A couple things that I think we can do is, you know, I think teacher pay, and that needs to increase. And I know that's more of a local issue, but things that the federal government can do to support teachers, you know, we've got to support those teachers with pay. And I think COVID, the COVID pandemic really emphasized what teachers go through. And then I think, you know, implementing programs, you know, and the federal government can have a hand in this, like teacher mentorship programs. There's a statistic out there that I think only about half of teachers make it to their 10th year of service in teaching. A lot of teachers burn out, but having these teacher mentorship programs to kind of guide young teachers along, it's a bit of a lonely business out there too. So, you know, guiding young teachers along. And then what we're trying to do here in Rockford, I even had a couple students myself. I was teaching seniors this past year. They're going through what's called a pathway at Rockford University, where a local university partners with the local school district. So these two of these students that I just had, they're going to go into education and kind of be guided along this pathway here at Rockford University. And then when they come out, they can do their student teaching at Rockford Public Schools 205. And then, you know, they'll be offered a job. Of course, they'll have to meet some criteria, but they'll be offered the job if they meet all of these criteria. So these different things that we can do to support teachers is, you know, very vital because, you know, as our communities need good schools, absolutely.
And I also wanted to ask about another thing that I know is close to your mind and heart, caring for veterans. And it seems like a lot of us don't hear a lot of us do hear about veterans struggling to get adequate medical and mental health care. What do you think can be done to improve veterans' health care?
Yeah, I think, you know, it gets down to we have to fund it. So we all know you get what you pay for. And I know in previous administrations, you know, with, you know, looking to nip and tuck and maybe cut corners here, you know, the people that feel that penny pinching at the end of the day are the ones who took that oath to defend our country, you know, in service to the Constitution. So, you know, bottom line, we just need to fund the care for the veterans. And, you know, when we think about, you know, Vietnam veterans entering into their older age, into their 70s and 80s right now, and then even Afghanistan and Iraq right now, after a 20-year conflict, you know, we cannot shortchange the soldiers, airmen, Marines, sailors who took that oath to defend the United States. And, you know, I'll even tell you that even in the National Guard, I'm a company commander, and some of the frustrations that I have when soldiers talk about, you know, reenlistment bonuses and those not going through, you know, we just need to make sure that we are there for those soldiers who are there for our communities here.
Mm. And I feel like I have to ask you about inflation. Feels like it's biting us all in various ways every day. Is there anything that you can, it's obviously a complicated issue, many, many, many facets to it, but any thoughts on how we can fight that?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, my wife right now, she's teaching summer school herself, you know, to make sure that we've had this discussion at our table too about, you know, how inflation is affecting our own family. And so she's, you know, taking on some extra work to make sure that, you know, we can make ends meet just in the Logeman household as well. So these are, you know, some of the types of conversations that we're having too. But, you know, the federal government as well, we look at this issue. It's a supply side issue and it's a demand issue. And so a couple different things, you know, I think we can do. Raising the cap on ethanol, and that would especially help us here in northern and western Illinois, help support ethanol manufacturers as well, to hopefully bring that gas price down just a little bit. But then, you know, also kind of more long-term, looking to bring back a lot of these jobs that have been outsourced overseas. When you think about how impactful the supply side of the problem has been contributing to inflation, you know, if we can work to bring some of these companies back and recapitalize them here in the United States, you know, then we're not dealing as deeply with that supply shortage and supply crisis that we've all been reading about, and I've been even teaching about in my economics classes. You know, like I told my economics students, it's this is a very fascinating time to be an economics student. And, you know, as Americans, we're all feeling the pinch. And, yeah, there's things that Congress and the federal government can do, as I kind of outlined right there. But, yeah, definitely we need to get this crisis under control here.
Well, Jonathan, just before we wrap up, anything generally that you would like voters to know about you or consider before they go to vote in just a couple days from now?
Yeah, it's getting close, just 6 days away here. So, yeah, I'm the father to three little girls here, and we just went to a T-ball game a couple nights ago. And, you know, that investment that I have in my community, one person, let's see, I was doing a radio interview. It was about 2 or 3 months ago, and I said, hey, you're a teacher. What makes you think that you can run for Congress? And I thought, I said, you know, I think that makes me an excellent candidate running for Congress because I am in the classroom daily, and I experience what goes on in our neighborhoods daily. And we need that type of perspective in Congress more than anywhere else. You know, somebody who is deeply invested in the communities, like I've been, somebody who knows our communities and knows the issues that we face. You know, I think that's what makes me a unique candidate, kind of an unconventional candidate, and one that would be a good representative for the Illinois 17th district here.